Chapter 22. The scarlet and orange light outside the moat house did not penetrate to its interior, which was, as usual, lighted by a rival glow of similar hue, radiating from the hearth. The maltster, after having lain down in his clothes for a few hours, was now sitting beside a three-legged table, breakfasting of bread and bacon. This was eaten on the plateless system, which is performed by placing a slice of bread upon the table, the meat flat upon the bread, a mustard plaster upon the meat, and a pinch of salt upon the whole, then cutting them vertically downwards with a large pocket knife till wood is reached, when the severed lamb is impaled on the knife, elevated, and sent the proper way of food. The maltster's lack of teeth appeared not to sensibly diminish his powers as a mill. He had been without them for so many years that toothlessness was felt less to be a defect than hard gums an acquisition. Indeed, he seemed to approach the grave as a hyperbolic curve approaches a straight line less directly as he got nearer, till it was doubtful if he would ever reach it at all. In the ash pit was a heap of potatoes roasting, and a boiling pipkin of charred bread, called offee. For the benefit of whomsoever should call, for Warren's was a sort of clubhouse, used as an alternative to the inn. I say, says I, we get a fine day, and then down comes a snapper at night, was a remark now suddenly heard spreading into the malt house from the door, which had been opened the previous moment. The form of Henry Frey advanced to the fire, stamping the snow from his boots, when about halfway there. The speech and entry had not seemed to be at all an abrupt beginning to the maltster, introductory matter being often omitted in this neighborhood, both from word and deed, and the maltster having the same latitude allowed him, did not hurry to reply. He picked up a fragment of cheese, by pecking upon it with his knife, as a butcher picks up skewers. Henry appeared in a drab kerseymere greatcoat, buttoned over his smock frock, the white skirts of the latter being visible to the distance of about a foot below the coattails, which, when you got used to the style of dress, looked natural enough, and even ornamental. It certainly was comfortable. Matthew Moon, Joseph Poorgrass, and other carters and wagoners followed at his heels, with great lanterns dangling from their hands, which showed that they had just come from the cart horse stables, where they had been busily engaged since 4 o'clock that morning. And how is she getting on without a bailey? The maltster inquired. Henry shook his head, and smiled one of the bitter smiles, dragging all the flesh of his forehead into a corrugated heap in the center. She'll rue it surely, surely. He said, Benji Pennyways were not a true man, or an honest bailey as big a betrayer as Judas Iscariot himself. But to think she can car on alone. He allowed his head to swing laterally 3 or 4 times in silence. And never in all my creeping up, never. This was recognized by all as the conclusion of some gloomy speech which had been expressed in thought alone during the shake of the head. Henry meanwhile retained several marks of despair upon his face, to imply that they would be required for use again directly he should go on speaking. All will be ruined, and ourselves too, or there's no meat in gentlemen's houses, said Mark Clark. A headstrong maid, that's what she is, and won't listen to no advice at all. Pride and vanity have ruined many a cobbler's dog. Dear, dear, when I think o' it, I sorrows like a man in travel. True, Henry, you do, I've heard ye, said Joseph Poorgrass in a voice of thorough attestation, and with a wire-drawn smile of misery. 'Twould do a mortal man no harm, to have what's under her bonnet, said Billy Smulberry, who had just entered, bearing his one tooth before him. As she can speak real language, and must have some sense somewhere. Do ye foller me? I do. But no bailey, I deserved that place, wailed Henry, signifying wasted genius by gazing blankly at visions of a high destiny apparently visible to him on Billy Smallberry's smock frock. Tea there, 'twas to be, I suppose. Your lot is your lot, and scripture is nothing. For if you do good you don't get rewarded according to your works, but be cheated in some mean way out of your recompense. No, no, I don't agree with thee there. said Mark Clark. God's a perfect gentleman in that respect. Good works, good pay, so to speak it, attested Joseph Poorgrass. A short pause ensued, and as a sort of entertainery turned and blew out the lanterns, which the increase of daylight rendered no longer necessary even in the malt house, with its one pane of glass. I wonder what a farmer woman can want with a harpsichord, dulcimer, pianer, or whatever 'tis they call it, said the maltster. Liddy saith she a new one. Got a pianer? Eh. Seems her old uncle's things were not good enough for her. She've bought all but everything new. There's heavy chairs for the stout, weak and wiry ones for the slender, great watches, getting on to the size of clocks, to stand upon the chimney piece. Pictures, for the most part wonderful frames. And long horsehair settles for the drunk, with horsehair pillows at each end, said Mr. Clark. Likewise looking glasses for the pretty, and lying books for the wicked. Firm loud tread was now heard stamping outside. The door was opened about 6 inches, and somebody on the other side exclaimed, neighbors, have ye got room for a few newborn lambs? Aye, sure, shepherd, said the conclave. The door was flung back till it kicked the wall, and trembled from top to bottom with the blow. Mr. Oak appeared in the entry with a steaming face, hay bands wound about his ankles to keep out the snow, a leather strap round his waist outside the smock frock, and looking altogether an epitome of the world's health and vigor. Four lambs hung in various embarrassing attitudes over his shoulders, and the dog George, whom Gabriel had contrived to fetch from Norcombe, stalked solemnly behind. Well, Shepherd Oak, and how's lambing this year, if I mid say it? Inquired Joseph Poorgrass. Terrible trying, said Oak. I've been wet through twice a day, either in snow or rain, this last fortnight. Caney and I haven't tined our eyes tonight. A good few twins too, I hear? Too many by half. Yes, 'tis a very queer lambing this year. We shan't have done by Lady Day. And last year 'twere all over by Sexagesimal Sunday, Joseph remarked. Bring on the rest, Cain, said Gabriel, and then run back to the ewes. I'll follow you soon. Caney Ball, a cheery-faced young lad, with a small circular orifice by way of mouth, advanced and deposited two others, and retired as he was bidden. Oak lowered the lambs from their unnatural elevation, wrapped them in hay, and placed them round the fire. We've no lambing hut here, as I used to have at Norcombe, said Gabriel, and 'tis such a plague to bring the weakly ones to a house. If 'twasn't for your place here, Malter, I don't know what I should do. This keen weather. And how is it with you today, Malter? Oh, neither sick nor sorry, shepherd, but no younger. Eh, I understand. Sit down, Shepherd Oak, continued the ancient man of malt. And how was the old place at Norcombe, when ye went for your dog? I should like to see the old familiar spot, but faith, I shouldn't know a soul there now. I suppose ye wouldn't. 'Tis altered very much. Is it true that Dickie Hill's wooden cider house is pulled down? Oh yes, years ago, and Dickie's cottage just above it. Well, to be sure, comma yes, and Tompkins' old apple tree is rooted, that used to bear 2 hogsheads of cider, and no help from other trees. Rooted? You don't say it. Ah, stirring times, we live in stirring times. And you can mind the old well that used to be in the middle of the place? That's turned into a solid iron pump with a large stone trough, and all complete. Dear, dear, how the face of nations alter, and what we live to see nowadays. Yes, and 'tis the same here. They've been talking, but now of the missus's strange doings. What have you been saying about her? Inquired Oak, sharply turning to the rest, and getting very warm. These middle-aged men have been pulling her over the coals for pride and vanity, said Mark Clark. But I say, let her have rope enough. Bless her pretty face, shouldn't I like to do so upon her cherry lips? The gallant Mark Clark here made a peculiar and well-known sound with his own. Mark, said Gabriel, sternly, now you mind this. None of that dalliance talk, that smack and coddle style of yours about Miss Everdon. I don't allow it. Do you hear? With all my heart, as I've got no chance, replied Mr. Clark, cordially. I suppose you've been speaking against her? Said Oak, turning to Joseph Poorgrass with a very grim look. No, no, not a word. It is a real joyful thing that she's no worse, that's what I say, said Joseph, trembling and blushing with terror. M. Matthew just said, Matthew Moon, what have you been saying? Asked Oak. I? Why, ye know I wouldn't harm a worm, no, not one underground worm, said Matthew Moon, looking very uneasy. Well, somebody has, and look here, neighbors. Gabriel, though one of the quietest and most gentle men on earth, rose to the occasion with martial promptness and vigor. Tee, that's my fist. Here he placed his fist, rather smaller in size than a common loaf, in the mathematical center of the maltster's little table, and with it gave a bump or two thereon, as if to ensure that their eyes all thoroughly took in the idea of fistiness, before he went further. And now the first man in the parish that I hear prophesying bad of our mistress, why, here the fist was raised, and let fall as Tor might have done with his hammer in assaying it, he'll smell and taste that, or I'm a Dutchman. All earnestly expressed by their features that their minds did not wander to Holland for a moment on account of this statement, but were deploring the difference which gave rise to the figure, and Mark Clark cried, "Here, here, just what I should ha said." The dog George looked up at the same time after the shepherd's menace, and though he understood English but imperfectly, began to growl. Now, don't ye take on so, shepherd, and sit down, said Henry, with a deprecating peacefulness equal to anything of the kind in Christianity. We hear that ye be a extraordinary good and clever man, shepherd, said Joseph Poorgrass with considerable anxiety from behind the maltster's bedstead, whither he had retired for safety. Apostrophe, 'tis a great thing to be clever, I'm sure, he added, making movements associated with states of mind rather than body. We wish we were, don't we, neighbors? Eh, that we do, sure, said Matthew Moon, with a small anxious laugh towards Oak, to show how very friendly disposed he was likewise. Who's been telling you I'm clever? Said Oak. 'Tis blowed about from pillar to post quite common, said Matthew. W, we hear that he can tell the time as well by the stars as we can by the sun and moon, shepherd. Yes, I can do a little that way, said Gabriel, as a man of medium sentiments on the subject. Names upon their wagons almost like copper plate, with beautiful flourishes, and great long tails. A excellent fine thing for ye to be such a clever man, shepherd. Joseph Poorgrass used to print to Farmer James Everdon's wagons before you came, and I could never mind which way to turn the J's and E's, could ye, Joseph? Joseph shook his head, to express how absolute was the fact that he couldn't. And so you used to do 'em the wrong way, like this, didn't he, Joseph? Matthew marked on the moldy floor with his whip handle. And how Farmer James would cuss, and call he a fool, wouldn't he, Joseph, when a seed is name looking so inside out like, continued Matthew Moon with feeling. Eh, would, said Joseph, meekly. But, you see, I wasn't so much to blame, for them J's and E's be such trying sons o' witches for the memory to mind, whether they face backward or forward, and I always had such a forgetful memory to. 'Tis a bad affliction for ye, being such a man of calamities in other ways. Well, 'tis, but a happy providence ordered that it should be no worse, and I feel my thanks. As to shepherd, there, I'm sure Missus ought to have made ye her bailey such a fitting man for't as you be. I don't mind owning that I expected it, said Oak, frankly. Indeed, I hoped for the place. At the same time, Miss Everdon has a right to be own bailey, if she choose, and to keep me down to be a common shepherd only. Oak drew a slow breath, looked sadly into the bright ash pit, and seemed lost in thoughts, not of the most hopeful hue. The genial warmth of the fire now began to stimulate the nearly lifeless lambs to bleat, and move their limbs briskly upon the hay, and to recognize for the first time the fact that they were born. Their noise increased to a chorus of baas, upon which Oak pulled the milk can from before the fire, and taking a small teapot from the pocket of his smock frock, filled it with milk, and taught those of the helpless creatures which were not to be restored to their dams, how to drink from the spout, a trick they acquired with astonishing aptitude. "And she don't even let me have the skins of the dead lambs, I hear?" resumed Joseph Poorgrass, his eyes lingering on the operations of Oak with the necessary melancholy. "I don't have them," said Gabriel. "He be very badly used, shepherd," hazarded Joseph again, in the hope of getting Oak as an ally in Lamentation after all. I think she's took against thee that I do." "Oh no, not at all," replied Gabriel, hastily, and a sigh escaped him, which the deprivation of lambskins could hardly have caused. Before any further remark had been added, a shade darkened the door, and Boldwood entered the malt house, bestowing upon each a nod of a quality between friendliness and condescension. "Ah, Oak, I thought you were here," he said. "I..." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.